It's probably beyond repair at this point.
Oh, I don't think so,
Mara assured him. I usually wore one of Lando's shirts during Sicarian's late-night visits and comm calls, and I made sure to leave one of them hanging on the open door of his private office safe after I'd gutted it.
Luke smiled. A tentative, still somewhat shamefaced smile, but a genuine smile nevertheless. At this point, that was enough. His reaction must have been interesting. Mara nodded.
I like to think so.
Yes. Luke took a deep breath, and she could sense him forcing old memories and extraneous thoughts to the back of his mind.
But, as you said, we've got a job to do, he said briskly. And it's going to be a long climb. Let's pack up the gear and get going.
It was, as Luke had estimated from the numbers the Quamshaw had gathered for him, indeed a long climb. Nearly as long as it had been from the bottom of the hidden stairway to that first door, in fact. And with Mara's muscles still recovering from 5 days of idleness, and Luke himself therefore handling R2 and all the rest of their equipment, it should have been something of a strain. But to his mild astonishment, it wasn't. And it didn't take any deep Jedi insight to understand why. The barrier he had set up between him and Mara was gone. The odd part was that he hadn't even realized there had been a barrier there. The communication they had together, their ability to sense each other's thoughts and emotions, had been so close that he'd simply assumed that was as strong as it got. He'd been wrong. He'd been very wrong. It was an exhilarating experience, and yet, at the same time, a somewhat intimidating one as well. He'd experienced close-mind contact with other people on occasion, but never to the same level as he was experiencing now. Mara's thoughts and emotions seemed to flow over him, their level and intensity now seemingly limited only by her personal barriers, as his own thoughts and emotions flowed the other direction back to her. There was a new rapport between them, a deepening of their old relationship that he only now realized how sorely he'd missed. Confession, apology, and forgiveness, Aunt Beru had been fond of reminding him, were the tools friends used to break walls down into bridges. Seldom, if ever in his life, had he had that truth so graphically demonstrated. With concern for Mara's physical condition and stamina foremost in his mind, he made sure the party took frequent rest breaks as they climbed, a policy that drove Mara just slightly less crazy than it did the Quamshaw. But he insisted, and as a result it took them nearly an hour to reach their target door. But when they did, at least Mara was fully ready to go.
All right, here's the plan, Luke told her, stretching out with the Force.
As near as he could tell, the entire area outside the hidden door was clear.
We'll leave R2 and the Quamshaw in here, and do a little reconnoiter on our own.
Sounds good.
Mara pulled out her blaster and checked it, and Luke could sense her working to control her private misgivings about going back in there. Understandable, of course. She was the one who'd gotten shot. Luke had had something of the same trouble the first time he'd gone back to visit Cloud City.
How about leaving one of our comlinks here with them?
Good idea,
Luke agreed, pulling his comlink from his belt and putting it in R2's light-duty grasping arm.
Don't forget and turn it off,
he admonished the droid. R2 warbled indignantly, the translation scrolling across the datapad.
Yes, I know, Luke assured him. I was just kidding.
What?
Mara asked.
He said turning off comlinks at critical moments was 3PO's trick,
Luke told her.
Private joke. You ready?
He could sense her reaching out to the Force for calm.
Ready,
she said.
Let's do it.
The secret door, gratifyingly enough, opened as quietly as the other one had. With Luke in the lead, they stepped out, closing the door behind them.
Now this, Mara said quietly in his ear, is like the Hjarna fortress.
Luke nodded acknowledgement. Looking around, they were in a vast chamber, with short wall segments scattered around apparently at random, linking the floor with a relatively low ceiling. The shiny wall coverings, elaborate flooring, and wall sconces they'd seen below were absent, leaving nothing but unadorned and unrelieved black stone. Despite that, though, the place seemed oddly airy. "Doesn't look like our friends downstairs are using this area," he said. "I wonder why." Mara took a few steps to the side and pointed around the end of one of the wall segments.
"There's your answer," she said. "Come on, let's go see."
She disappeared around the wall. Luke followed, noticing for the first time a gentle flow of air coming from that direction. And the reason for it was quickly clear. Beyond the wall, at the far side of the room, the black stone had been gashed open to the sky.
"Collateral damage from the battle that knocked down that tower, I'll bet," Mara said,
already crossing to the gash.
"Be careful,"
Luke warned her, hurrying to catch up.
Yeah,
Mara said. She reached the gash and cautiously looked out.
"I was right," she said, pointing. "There it is, or what's left of it."
Luke reached her side and looked out. They were looking across a vast circular rooftop that slanted downward from their position at a reasonably steep angle. The stub of Mara's ruined tower was ahead of them and slightly to the left, 80 meters or so away. The distance and dim sunlight made it hard to tell for sure, but to Luke's eye, the jagged edge looked slightly melted.
"And you say this stone absorbs turbolaser fire?" he said. "Like a very dry sponge,"
Mara agreed grimly.
"Whoever the builders of this place were, they must have had some impressive enemies."
"Let's hope they were satisfied with wrecking that one tower and then went away," Luke said, giving the rest of the rooftop a quick but careful examination.
Symmetrically placed on the right side of the slanting rooftop was another tower, this one undamaged, stretching a good 90 meters into the sky and topped with a ring of ominous-looking protrusions.
Weapon systems, undoubtedly.
At the far end of the roof, almost 200 meters from where he and Mara stood, he could see twin bumps that seemed to extend outward from the roof and then continue down the wall on that side.
Twin guardhouses, possibly, flanking the main entrance.
Beyond the roof, he could see a smooth surface stretching through the craggy mountaintop away from the fortress that could only be an access road. In the center of the fortress was a 30-meter-long structure whose flat-topped roof extended horizontally out from the main rooftop, making the whole thing look like a round-cornered wedge that had been stuck on as an afterthought.
"There's a landing pad on top,"
Mara said, pointing to the structure.
"You can just make out the markings."
Luke nodded. The markings were dim, but visible enough when you knew to look for them.
"They probably have lights they can turn on when something friendly is on its way.
With turbolasers ready at the top of that tower in case they're not so friendly."
Easing through the gap in the wall, Mara took a few steps out onto the rooftop, peering toward the landing pad.
"Looks like the area under the pad is open in front," she reported. "Probably their hangar. Might be a handy place to make for if we ever get caught too far away from our exit."
She turned back around,
and her breath caught,
a surge of surprise shooting through her.
"Whoa,"
she said, her eyes tracking upward.
"Come take a look at this."
Maneuvering through the crack, Luke crossed to her side and turned around. Rising from atop the room they'd just been in was yet another tower.
And it had friends.
Spaced around the curve of the fortress rooftop to the left were three more, all of the same design. Even with Luke's skewed perspective, he could tell that these four rear towers were both thicker and a good 20 meters taller than the single one standing below them. And as with the one below, each of these was also crowned by a ring of weapons emplacements.
"This must have been one impressive place in its heyday,"
Mara commented. Her voice was steady, but Luke could tell that she was feeling the same vague uneasiness he was.
Like the one on Hijama. I wish to please as I knew what they were built to protect.
Or to defend against,
Luke added, taking one last look around the rooftop. No lights, no movement, no signs of life at all.
Let's get back inside and find the way down.
The way down was on the far side of one of the other wall segments, a smaller version of the spiral slideway they used in the barracks section down below. Unlike that one, though, the slideway here wasn't moving.
Either damaged or shut down for lack of use,
Mara said, easing a cautious eye over the edge.
Next level down doesn't look inhabited either.
This whole section is probably out of use, Luke said, as they started down. The way the roof slopes toward the broken tower, each of the levels ought to have a little more floor space as we go down. They've probably set up shop on the larger levels.
Makes sense,
Mara agreed.
Let's keep going until we reach a floor with a working slideway somewhere on it. That should be either their highest working level or close to it.
The floors did indeed extend farther outward as they continued down, with the pattern of random wall segments changing with each level. It wasn't until the fourth level that Luke finally caught the faint hum of working machinery.
I think we're here, he murmured, shifting his grip on his lightsaber and stretching out with the force. There still didn't seem to be anyone nearby.
Looks like it,
Mara agreed, cupping a hand around one ear.
That sounds like one of the slideways. Shall we take a look?
Luke nodded. I'll go first. You stay behind me.
He headed out, moving as silently as he could across the empty space, trying to ignore Mara's annoyance from behind him. She could call it overprotectiveness if she wanted, and she undoubtedly was calling it exactly that. But after watching her do 5 days in a healing trance, he much preferred to err on the side of caution. He reached one of the rare, at least on this level, wall segments, and eased an eye around it. Beyond it, set right up against the far wall, was the spiral slideway they had heard.
All right, Luke murmured over his shoulder. Real easy now.
He sensed Mara's emotional call, but it wasn't coming from directly behind him. He glanced around, feeling a flash of annoyance of his own as he spotted her standing at the corner of one of the other wall segments 20 meters off to his left. She beckoned to him, a quick, impatient gesture, and there was a sudden sense of dread in her emotions. He made it to her side in less than 10 seconds.
What is it?
He hissed. She nodded toward the wall,
a silent churning in her eyes and mind.
Around there,
she said, lightsaber ready in his hand. Luke slid around the end of the wall segment. Beyond it was a large open space that had been set up as a sort of command center, though it was currently as unoccupied as everywhere else they'd been today. 2 circles of command consoles had been laid out, the boards and displays winking status lights toward the empty chairs in front of them. To one side, a larger and more elaborate chair ringed by its own status boards had been set up on a meter-high platform where it could overlook the entire operation. And in the center of it all was a sight that sent a shiver of memory along Luke's spine. A holographic map of the galaxy, with the sectors of the New Republic, the Empire, and the rest of the known regions marked out in a bewildering array of 12 different colors. The whole variegated mosaic stretched across perhaps a quarter of the huge spiral, fading into neutral white where the edges of the Outer Rim territories gave way to the vastness of the unknown regions beyond. It was a duplicate of the galactic hollow Emperor Palpatine had had in his throne room in Mount Tantus. Luke swallowed, tearing his eyes away from the hollow to give the surrounding equipment a closer look. Yes, the consoles were indeed Imperial issue. Status and computer access boards from a Star Destroyer or other major capital ship. The chairs, likewise, were straight from a Star Destroyer's bridge crew pits. and the overseer chair and boards were those of an Imperial Fleet admiral, such as the one Grand Admiral Thrawn would have used. He felt the whisper of air as Mara came up close beside him. "I think we found our link to the Imperials," he told her. "It looks like even Palpatine may have had a hand in this place." Her hair swished against his shoulder as she shook her head.
"You're missing the point, Luke," she muttered. "Look at that hollow. I mean, really look at it."
Luke frowned, focusing on the galactic spiral again. What in space was she referring to? And then, abruptly, he caught his breath. No. No. He was seeing things. Surely he was seeing things. But he wasn't. At the edge of the known galaxy, where Palpatine's hollow had shown only the white stars of the unknown regions, an entirely new area had been colored in. A huge new area.
"Funny, isn't it?" Mara said,
the dread still swirling through her.
"He was exiled from the Imperial Court, you know. Just summarily thrown out."
"Who was?" Luke asked.
"Grand Admiral Thrawn," she said. "Picked the wrong side in one of the political battles that were always going on there and lost. Everyone else in the Cabal wound up demoted or imprisoned, or else reassigned to a semi-private torture chamber like garrison duty in the Outer Rim. But not Thrawn. Oh no. Even the Outer Rim was too good for this ungrateful alien who'd been accepted into Imperial society and paid them back for their kindness with a slap in the face. No. They had to come up with something very special for him."
"And that something was exile to the unknown regions?" Mara nodded.
"If the Outer Rim was a torture cell, the unknown regions was a fully populated rancor pit," she said. "So with some prodding, and probably a lot of deal-making, they got Palpatine to put him aboard a Star Destroyer and send him on a one-way trip past the Outer Rim."
She snorted out a derisive laugh.
"And just to add insult to injury, they managed to make it a mapping expedition. Imagine, one of the best strategists the Empire had ever known being reduced to mapping duty. Ruining his life and his reputation with a single stroke. I'll bet they were chuckling together about it for years afterward."
Luke shook his head.
"I seem to be missing the joke."
"So did they," Mara said,
her dark mood darkening even further.
"The joke is that it apparently never occurred to any of them that Palpatine was always one step ahead of whatever was happening in his court. And if he was a step ahead, a strategist like Thrawn was at least two steps ahead."
Luke's mouth felt dry.
"Are you saying that Thrawn and Palpatine had the whole thing planned out from the beginning?"
"Of course they did."
Mara gestured at the hollow.
"Just look at all that territory he opened up. He couldn't possibly have done that by himself, with just a single Star Destroyer. Palpatine must have been feeding him men and ships all along the way."
"But that can't all be Imperial territory," Luke said. "I mean, it can't."
"Why not?"
Mara countered.
"Oh, I agree, there probably aren't more than a few actual colonies out there. But you can bet there are Imperial garrisons scattered all over the place. Plus intel centers and listening posts, and probably a few full-blown shipyards. And if I know Thrawn, probably a whole network of alliances with the natives, too."
"But if that's Imperial territory, why hasn't the Empire made any use of it?"
Luke argued.
"I've seen the data, Mara. They're down to practically nothing over there."
"It's obvious, isn't it?"
she said quietly.
"They're not using it because they don't know it's there."
For a long minute, neither of them spoke. Luke gazed at the hollow, listening to the distant hum of the spiral slideway. The terrible implications of those gently glowing lights tumbling over each other in his mind. There had to be the equivalent of 250 sectors there. Nearly 30 times the Empire's current size.
with 30 times the Empire's number of warships, garrisons, and shipyards?
Very possibly.
If all those resources were suddenly put at Bastion's disposal.
We need more information, he said, starting toward the console rings. Let's see if there's a computer jack R2 can plug into.
Risky,
Mara warned.
This is a command center, and command centers always have security flags set up to catch unauthorized access.
He stopped, grimacing. Unfortunately, she had a point.
All right, then,
he said, turning again to face her.
What's your plan?
We go directly to the source.
Mara took a deep breath.
I go downstairs and talk to them.
Luke felt his mouth drop open.
And you call my plans risky?
You have a better suggestion?
That's beside the point, he growled. Anyway, if someone's going to go down there, it ought to be me.
Not a chance,
Mara said firmly.
Point one, they shot at you on the way in, but they didn't shoot at me. Point two, you said yourself you had the feeling they wanted to see me. Point three, if the situation degenerates to the point where a rescue is called for, you and your Jedi skills are better against a crowd than mine. And point four...
With a tight smile, she unhooked her lightsaber and stepped over to him.
Point four is that they may not know the extent of my Force skills,
she said, handing him the weapon.
If shove comes to shake, that may give me the edge I'd need.
Luke fingered her lightsaber, feeling the familiar coolness in his hand. His own first lightsaber, the one Obi-Wan had given him, which he had given her in turn on the palace rooftop on Coruscant. He'd been younger than she was when he'd first taken that lightsaber into danger. Younger, less experienced, and far brasher.
But still... And the last thing I need right now is for you to start getting all overprotective,
Mara added. Just the hint of a warning glare in her eyes.
I've survived just fine all these years. I can take care of myself.
Luke locked eyes with her. Odd, he thought, that he'd forgotten just how brilliant a green those eyes were. Though perhaps it was just the lighting.
No way I can talk you out of it,
he asked, trying one last time.
Not unless you can come up with a better plan,
she said, pulling out her comlink and sleeve blaster.
Here. There's no point in my keeping these. They'll just take them away from me anyway. I'll keep my blast tech. They'd be suspicious if I came in completely unarmed.
Luke took the comlink and sleeve blaster from her, his hand lingering on hers before she withdrew it, oddly unwilling to let it go.
I wish we hadn't left the other comlink with R2, he said. You could have kept this one, and I'd have been able to listen in on what's going on.
If something goes sour, you might need to whistle up the Quam Ja in a hurry,
she reminded him.
Anyway, can't you follow me with the Force?
I can follow your presence, Luke said. I can get your emotions, and probably some images that way, but I can't get much in the way of words.
Too bad you're not Palpatine,
Mara commented, busying herself with removing her sleeve holster.
I could talk to him just fine.
Luke felt a stab of guilt and shame, her earlier indictment of his dark side dabbling flooding back. She caught the emotion, or else the expression on his face, and smiled tightly.
Hey, I was kidding,
she assured him, handing him the sleeve holster.
Look, you just follow what you can. I'll give you a full report on the details when I get back.
All right, Luke said.
Be careful, okay?
To his surprise, she reached out and took his hand.
I'll be fine,
she told him, squeezing his hand briefly before letting go.
See you.
And with that, she was gone, slipping out of the command center and around the wall toward the slideway. With a sigh, Luke stepped over to the nearby wall segment and sank down into a crouch with his back pressed against it. Closing his eyes for better concentration, he stretched out with the Force. In times past, on Dagobah and Tirfon and other places,
He'd been able to use the Force to obtain glimpses of future places and events.
Now, as Mara headed down the slideway, he tried to focus that same ability onto real-time observation, hoping to be able to see what was happening to her. It worked, too, at least after a fashion. The image he got of Mara and her surroundings was faint and foggy, heavily colored by her emotions and shifting mental state, and with the same discomforting tendency to ripple or metamorphose that seemed to be characteristic of Jedi visions in general. But with Mara's mind there to act as anchor, he was able to quickly drag the images back to something at least vaguely understandable. It was hardly ideal, but it seemed clear that it was all he was going to get. The slideway from this level seemed to be roughly the same size as the one they had used to get down from the roof. Mara moved to the intersection and headed down, apparently making no attempt at concealment. The lack of any sudden combat twinges in her emotions as she reached the next level implied she didn't see anyone, though he had the impression that she was still hearing distant sounds. She made no move to get off at this level, but let the slideway carry her on down. The next level was more of the same, with no one coming near the slideway. Luke could sense a definite annoyance beginning to seep through the alertness in Mara's mind, an annoyance aimed both at the alien's seeming disinterest in her and at their incompetence at basic internal security. She passed that level and the next, and started down toward the next, and suddenly, there was a dizzying jolt that slammed like a groundquake through her emotions, accompanied by a brief flash of pain. Luke stiffened, eyes jerking open as he scrambled to his feet. But even as he did so, he felt a warning flicker of reassurance from her, together with understanding of what had just happened. Without warning, the slideway section she'd been riding on had suddenly reversed direction, yanking her feet out from under her and slamming her flat on her chest on the ramp. And as the moment of dizziness from the impact faded away, her combat emotions flared to full alertness. She was no longer alone. Luke clenched his hands into helpless fists as he rode her emotions to try to pierce the hazy image. There were several people standing around her, of the same species as those they tangled with once already. And as near as he could tell through the wavering view, one of them was calling Mara by name. For a moment, he continued to talk to her, and though Luke couldn't hear any of the words, he had the impression that he was asking her to accompany them farther into the fortress. She agreed. There was a flicker of inevitability as they took her blast tech, and then the whole group was walking away from the slideway down a corridor that Mara recognized as decorated similarly to the barracks area they'd seen farther below. Soon, all too soon, the group reached an open door. Another exchange of unheard words, a suppressed flutter of uneasiness from Mara, and she stepped alone through the door into the room beyond. From her thoughts, he could tell that there were others waiting inside for her. One of them, possibly more than one, called out to her as she moved farther inside. Mara answered, surges and flickers of emotion marking bits of information that the vagueness of their contact prevented Luke from getting himself. She continued to walk farther into the room, and without warning, right in the middle of a step, the touch of her mind cut abruptly off, leaving Luke staring at the quiet lights of the command center. Heart pounding in his chest, he stretched out with the Force, trying to reestablish the contact. Mara? Mara! But it was no use. There was no response. No returning contact. No sense of her presence. Nothing at all. She was gone. Chapter 27. Mara took in the room in a glance as she stepped through the doorway. It was long and narrow, stretching perhaps 50 meters back from the door, but no more than 5 meters wide. Near the far wall was a solid-looking chair, facing away from her. 5 meters beyond that, right at the room's back wall, were 6 more of the blue-skinned aliens, all wearing the same tight-fitting burgundy patchwork design outfits as the ones who had escorted her here from the slideway. And like her escort, each of the aliens was wearing Imperial ranking bars on their chests beneath the high-topped black collars. But even as her glance took in those details, her main attention was caught by the man in the center of the group, seated in a duplicate of the empty chair facing him a few meters away. His hair was gray, his skin was lined with age, but his eyes were alert and shrewd, and his back was straight and proud. And he was wearing the uniform and insignia of an Imperial Admiral.
"So, here you are at last, Mara Jade,"
he said, waving her forward with a gnarled hand.
"I must say, you took your time."
"Sorry to have kept you waiting," Mara countered with an edge of sarcasm as she walked toward them.
She could feel Luke's concern and nervousness at the back of her mind, and tried to send him a reassurance she didn't entirely feel. These people knew who she was, and presumably what she was, and yet here they were, letting her move freely toward them. It all looked far too casual, and she didn't like it one bit.
"If your people hadn't been so trigger-poppy, I'd have been here a lot sooner."
The Admiral bowed his head briefly.
"My apologies. For whatever it's worth, it was an accident. Please, come sit down."
Mara continued forward, trying to watch all of them at once, her senses alert for trouble. If they had a trap set, it would be sprung somewhere before she got too close to them. And without warning, right in the middle of a step, Luke's presence suddenly vanished from her mind. Her brain froze in shock, sheer momentum keeping her feet moving.
"Luke! Luke! Come on, where are you?"
But there was no response. No emotion, no sense of mind or thought, no sense of presence at all. Incredibly, impossibly, he was gone. Gone.
"Come, sit down,"
the Admiral said again.
"I imagine you must be quite worn out after all you've been through."
"You're too kind," Mara said,
the words sounding distant and mechanical through the pounding of blood in her ears as she forced her feet to keep moving her forward. What in the world could possibly have happened to him? There could only be one answer. Somehow they'd gotten past his Jedi senses, had penetrated his Jedi powers, and had launched a sudden, undetected, and unblocked attack. And Luke Skywalker, Jedi Master, was unconscious. Or dead. The thought slashed into her mind, cutting through her heart like a jagged blade.
No, it couldn't be. It couldn't. Not now.
The gray-haired man was still gazing at her, a thoughtful look on his face, and with an agonized effort, Mara shoved the fear and pain away to the back of her mind. If Luke was merely unconscious, they could still get out of this. If he was dead, she would most likely soon be joining him. Either way, this was no time to let her emotions muddy her thinking. She made it the rest of the way to the chair, and sank carefully into it.
"You don't need to look quite so worried,"
the Admiral said soothingly.
"We have no intention of harming you."
"Of course not,"
Mara said, hearing the bitterness in her voice.
"Just like you had no intention of harming me on my last trip in here."
The Admiral's lip twitched.
"As I said before, that was a regrettable accident,"
he said.
"They were shooting at the vermin flying around near you. We've had some problems in the past with them getting inside. When you started shooting back, I'm afraid they jumped to the wrong conclusion. My deepest apologies."
"That makes me feel so much better,"
Mara growled.
"Now what?"
The Admiral seemed mildly surprised.
"We talk,"
he said.
Why else do you think we gave you our location in the first place? We wanted you to come see us.
Ah, Mara said. So her guess earlier had been right. Those two ships had deliberately flown off on vectors that would lead her here. Unless, of course, he was lying after the fact to cover up his pilot's blunders.
You could have just sent me an invitation,
she told him, feeling her forehead crease slightly as she stretched out toward him with the force. Odd. For some reason, she couldn't seem to touch him. Not him. Not the aliens flanking him.
Or would that have been too straightforward and easy?
The Admiral smiled knowingly.
With an open invitation, I doubt you would have come alone. Something more vague seemed a better arrangement. I apologize for not having an escort waiting, by the way. Your landing caught us a bit by surprise.
As did your arrival earlier inside the fortress, the alien standing at the Admiral's right added, his voice smooth and cultured, his glowing red eyes steady on Mara. If we'd known you were coming, our people would have been much more careful with their Cheriks. May I ask how you managed to penetrate the fortress without being spotted?
We turned ourselves into vermin and flew in, of course,
Mara told him.
It was faster than walking.
Of course,
the Admiral said with a smile.
Or perhaps you scaled up the side of the fortress and came in through one of the cracks.
Mara shook her head.
Sorry, trade secret.
Ah,
the Admiral said, still smiling.
It's not important. I was merely curious. The point is that you are here, Mara, just as we wished. May I call you Mara, by the way? Or would you prefer Captain Jade or some other title?
Call me anything you want,
Mara told him.
And what should I call you? Or doesn't anyone in this place have a name?
All thinking beings have names, Mara,
the man said.
Mine is Admiral Voss Park. It's a pleasure to meet you at last.
Likewise,
Mara said, staring at him as a ripple of shock went through her. Voss Park, the Victory Star Destroyer captain who had found Thrawn on a deserted world and brought him to the Imperial Court, and who had subsequently joined him in his shame and supposed exile from the Empire. But the man in front of her...
I imagine I look rather older than you might have expected,
Park said offhandedly.
Assuming you had any expectations at all, of course. I may have overly flattered myself to assume the Emperor's hand would even remember my name, let alone my face.
I remember both, Mara said. You were one of the people every faction in the court used as an example of what not to do in the middle of a political fight.
She glanced at the aliens.
But then those were the same people who also thought Palpatine sent Thrawn out here as a punishment. So what did they know?
And you think Mithron Yoroto's mission was otherwise? The alien at Park's right asked.
I know otherwise,
Mara assured him, looking him up and down.
Tell me, Admiral, does the whole race talk like Thrawn? Or is this some special cultural training you give your troops in case they're all invited out for high day drinks?
The alien's eyes narrowed.
Calm yourself, Stent,
Park said dryly, holding up a hand.
You must understand that one of Mara Jade's most subtle weapons has always been her talent for irritating people. Irritated people don't think clearly, you see.
Or maybe I just don't like any of you very much,
Mara said, feeling a touch of annoyance at Park's quick and casual insight. Usually her enemies didn't figure that one out nearly so quickly. The slower ones never figured it out at all.
But enough about me. Let's hear about this grand push of yours out into the unknown regions. You gave up a lot, after all. Coruscant? The status and camaraderie of the Imperial fleet?
Deliberately, she looked at Stent.
Civilization?
Stent's eyes narrowed again, but Park merely smiled.
You've met Thrawn,
he said, his voice softening to near reverence.
Any true warrior would have given up whatever was necessary for the chance to serve under him.
Except those of his own people, I gather, Mara countered. Or did I hear the story wrong of how he wound up on Coruscant?
No, I'm sure you heard correctly,
Park said with a shrug.
But like everything else people think they know about Thrawn, that particular story is somewhat incomplete.
Is it now?
Mara said, leaning back in her chair and crossing her legs, a posture designed by its apparent helplessness to put suspicious people at ease. With the same motion, she surreptitiously rocked the chair back a bit, trying to gauge its weight. Very heavy, unfortunately, which eliminated it as a grab-and-throw weapon.
I seem to have some time on my hands. Why don't you start at the beginning?
Stent laid his hand on Park's shoulder. Admiral, I'm not sure...
It's all right, Stent.
Park calmed him, his eyes steady on Mara.
We can hardly expect her help unless she has all the facts now, can we?
Mara frowned.
My help in what?
It started better than half a century ago,
Park said, ignoring her question.
Back when the Outbound Flight Project was preparing to fly, just before the Clone Wars broke out. Well before your time, of course. I don't know if you'd even have heard of it.
I've read about the Outbound Flight, Mara said. A group of Jedi Masters and others decided to head out to another galaxy and see what was there.
Ultimately, their destination was indeed another galaxy,
Park nodded.
But before that particular expedition began, it was decided to send them and their ship on a, shall we say, shakedown cruise. A great circle through part of the vast unknown regions of our own galaxy.
He waved a hand back towards Stent and the guards.
A route, as it turned out, that was to bring it across the edge of territory controlled by the Chiss.
Chiss. So that was what they called themselves. Mara ran the name through her memory, searching for any reference the Emperor might have made to them. Nothing.
And the Chiss didn't feel like being good hosts that day?
Actually, the ruling Chiss families never had the chance to decide one way or the other,
Park said.
Palpatine had already decided that the Jedi represented a grave threat to the Old Republic, and had sent an assault force into the region to quietly take care of Outbound Flight when they showed up.
And there they were, busily setting up their ambush when Thrawn found them.
He shook his head.
You have to understand the situation, Mara, to truly appreciate it. On one side were hand-picked units of Palpatine's own private army, equipped with 15 top-line combat ships. On the other side were Commander Mithron Urodo of the Chiss Expansionary Defense, and perhaps 12 small and insignificant border patrol ships.
I appreciate it just fine,
Mara said, suppressing a shudder.
How badly did Thrawn slaughter them?
Utterly,
Park said, the ghost of a smile creasing his face.
I believe only a single one of Palpatine's ships remained capable of flight, and that only because Thrawn wanted some of the invaders left alive to interrogate. Fortunately for that remnant, and perhaps one day for the galaxy as a whole, among the survivors was the leader of the task force, one of Palpatine's advisors, a man named Kinmin Doriana.
Mara swallowed. That name she most certainly did remember. He'd been Palpatine's right-hand man, supposedly one of the grand architects of his rise to power.
I've heard it, yes, she said.
I thought you would have,
Park said, nodding.
Very much a shadow advisor, Few people ever even heard his name, let alone knew his true position and power. But among those who did, it was sometimes speculated that his untimely death left a gap which Palpatine ultimately tried to fill with three other people. Darth Vader, Grand Admiral Thrawn...
He smiled again.
And you...
You're too kind,
Mara said evenly, not even a whisper of pride rising within her at such a statement. So she had indeed had position and authority in Palpatine's eyes, perhaps more than even she had realized. But it didn't matter. That part of her life had died, unmourned, a long time ago.
You're very well informed, too.
This was Thrawn's personal base,
Park said, waving a hand around him.
And information, as you may have noticed, was one of his few obsessions. The databases in the fortress core below us are possibly the most extensive in the galaxy.
Magnificent, I'm sure, Mara said. Too bad all his knowledge couldn't keep him from getting killed.
She had hoped to spark some kind of reaction from them. To her surprise, though, none of them so much as blinked. Park, in fact, actually smiled.
Never assume, Mara,
he warned.
But that's getting ahead of the story. Where were we?
Doriana and outbound flight, Mara said.
Ah, thank you,
Park said.
At any rate, Doriana explained the entire situation to Thrawn and convinced him that outbound flight had to be destroyed. 2 weeks later, when the ship arrived in Chiss space, Thrawn was waiting.
Goodbye, outbound flight,
Mara murmured.
Yes,
Park agreed.
But though that was the end of that, it was the beginning of trouble for Thrawn himself. The Chiss military philosophy, you see, did not recognize the morality of preemptive strikes. What Thrawn did was, in their minds, equivalent to murder.
Mara snorted gently.
No offense, Admiral, but it sounds to me like it's your perceptions that need an overhaul. How can the slaughter of a bunch of Jedi Masters minding their own business be anything but murder?
Park looked at her gravely.
You'll understand, Mara,
he said, his voice almost trembling.
In time, you'll understand.
Mara frowned. The man was either a terrific actor, or there was something buried in all of this that had him well and truly terrified. Again, she stretched out with the Force. Again, she couldn't seem to touch him at all. With an obvious effort, Park pulled himself together.
But again, I'm getting ahead of myself. As I said, Thrawn's action did not sit well with the ruling Chiss families. He was able to talk his way clear and retain his position. But from that point on, they watched him very carefully. And eventually, as he dealt with some of the Chiss' enemies, he pushed things just a little too far. He was brought up on charges, stripped of all rank, and sent into exile on an uninhabited world at the edge of Imperial space.
Where who should show up but a Victory Star Destroyer?
Mara said.
Captained by a man willing to take the risk of bringing him back to Coruscant.
She raised her eyebrows.
Only it wasn't nearly as much of a risk as everyone thought, was it?
Park smiled.
It most certainly wasn't,
he said.
In fact, I learned later that Palpatine had made at least 2 unsuccessful attempts over the years to contact the Chiss and offer Thrawn a position with his soon-to-be empire. No, he was most pleased with my gift. Though because of the political realities of the court, he had to keep that pleasure hidden.
So Thrawn went into private military training, and eventually rose to the highest rank Palpatine could offer, Mara said. And then, what? Arranged to have himself sent back here, so he could make the Chiss ruling families pay for what they'd done to him?
Park looked shocked.
Certainly not. The Chiss are his people, Mara. He has no interest in hurting them. Quite the opposite, in fact. He came back here to protect them.
From what?
Stent gave a contemptuous snort. From what? He bit out harshly.
You soft, complacent female. You think that because you lounge around your quiet worlds behind a ring of warships, that the rest of the galaxy is a safe place to live? There are 100 different threats out there that would freeze your blood if you knew about them. The ruling families can't stop them. Neither can any other power in the region. If our people are to be protected, it's up to us.
And you are... You specifically, I mean.
Stent drew himself up straighter.
We are Syndic Mithron Nerodo's household phalanx, he said.
And there was no mistaking the pride in his tone.
We live only to serve him. And through him to serve the Chiss.
Whether they want your help or not, I guess,
Mara said, noting the alien's use of the present tense. There it was again. The assumption or belief that Thrawn wasn't dead. Could they be that out of touch?
Do they even know you're out here?
They know the forces of the Empire are out here,
Park said.
And while the ruling families pretend they don't know Stent and his unit are working with us, the average Chiss does in fact know. We have a steady flow of young Chiss arriving at our various bases and garrisons to enlist in our fight.
Mara suppressed a grimace. So they did indeed have bases out here.
Palpatine wouldn't have been very pleased to see aliens mixing with Imperial forces, she pointed out. I doubt the current regime on Bastion would either.
Park's expression sobered.
Indeed,
he said.
Which brings us to the problem and situation we now face. Many years ago, Thrawn told us that if he was ever reported dead, we should keep at our labors here and in the unknown regions, and to look for his return 10 years afterward.
Mara blinked in disbelief. They really were out of touch.
It's going to be a long wait,
she said, trying not to sound too sarcastic.
He was stabbed in the chest, right through the back of his command chair. Most people have a hard time recovering from that kind of treatment.
Thrawn is not most people, Stent reminded her.
Was, Mara said. Not is, was. He died at Bilbringi.
Did he?
Park asked.
Did you ever see a body? Or hear anything about his supposed death that didn't come from the Imperial's own news sources?
Mara opened her mouth, paused. Park was leaning slightly toward her, a glint of anticipation in his eye.
Was that a rhetorical question?
She asked.
Or are you expecting me to have an actual answer?
Park smiled, leaning back in his chair again.
I told you she was quick,
he said, looking up at Stent.
As a matter of fact, yes. We thought you might. You have complete access to Talon Card's information network, after all. If anyone would know the truth, it would be you.
A sudden jolt of understanding shot through Mara.
You weren't hunting Imperial connections when you buzzed the Kavriloot base and Terek Star Destroyer, were you? You were hunting me.
Very good. Indeed,
Park said approvingly.
In fact, when Dreel spotted you near that Star Destroyer, he thought you and Thrawn might already have come to an arrangement. Hence his transmission, asking Thrawn to make contact.
Mara shook her head.
Look, I know you've been out here a long time, and I realize it must have been hard for you, but it's time to face the hard, cold facts. Like it or not, Thrawn is dead.
Really?
Park said.
Then why is the Holonet buzzing with the news that he has returned and is making alliances?
And that he's been seen by many planetary and sector leaders, Stent put in.
including the Diamolan senator to Coruscant and former General Lando Calrissian.
Mara stared at him. Lando? No, she said. You're wrong. Or you're bluffing.
I assure you, I...
Park broke off, his eyes shifting to a point behind Mara as a breath of air on the back of her neck announced the door behind her had opened. She turned, tensing. But it was only a youngish, middle-aged man, walking with a slight limp along the left-hand wall of the long room toward her. Despite his age, he wore the uniform of an Imperial TIE fighter pilot. Between his graying goatee and similarly graying shock of dark hair, he wore an almost unheard-of rarity. A black patch over his right eye.
Yes, General?
Park called to him.
Mid-course transmission from Sorn, Admiral,
the man said, his one eye trained unblinkingly on Mara as he strode past her.
His pass-through bastion system was inconclusive. Lots of rumors and speculations, but no hard evidence.
He paused.
But the rumors do say Thrawn is currently there.
Wait a minute, Mara put in, frowning. You know where Bastion is?
Oh, yes,
Park assured her.
Thrawn anticipated that the seat of government might periodically change, and he wanted us to know where it was at any given time. So he had a special homing device installed in a dummy file in the Central Imperial Records Library, reasoning that where the government went, the library would soon follow.
It's a device of Chief's design, Stent added with clear pride. Totally dormant except when in hyperspace, a time when virtually no one thinks to do scans for such things. We followed Bastion's movement from system to system with a great deal of interest.
Indeed.
Park looked at the pilot again.
Is Sorn on his way back?
He'll be here in about 3 hours.
The pilot nodded at Mara.
Has she given you anything useful?
Not really,
Park said, looking at Mara as he gestured to the newcomer.
But I'm forgetting my manners. Mara Jade... This is General Baron.
He paused dramatically.
Suntir Vell.
Mara kept her face expressionless.
Baron Suntir Vell.
Once a legendary TIE fighter pilot, later turning his back on the Empire to become a member of Rogue Squadron, he had vanished years ago into a trap set by Imperial Intelligence Director Izard and never been heard of again. The general assumption had been that Izard had him summarily executed for treason. Yet here he was, apparently once again flying with Imperial forces. And a general yet.
General Fell,
she nodded acknowledgement.
Do I take it from the Admiral's tone that I'm supposed to be impressed?
The young Fell, she suspected, would have taken instant offense at that. But this older version merely favored her with a faint smile.
There's no time for pride out here, Jade,
he said gravely.
Once you've joined us, you'll understand.
I'm sure,
Mara said, folding her arms across her chest and squeezing her hands tightly into fists with the effort as she stretched out with all her strength. The force was there. She could feel it flowing through her. Yet for some reason she still couldn't touch any of them, human or Chiss. It was almost like the force-suppressing effect of those sessile Merkur creatures called Islamari. But that couldn't be it, because she could still feel the force perfectly well. Besides, there weren't any of the creatures in the room with them, and... She swallowed a sudden grimace, feeling like a fool as she focused on Park and the Chiss standing with their backs to the wall. Of course there weren't any Islamari in the room. They were one room over, pressed up against the other side of the wall, where they could protect her interrogators from her mind probes. They probably put the creatures along the sides, too. Probably why Fell had been so careful to hug the wall on his way across the room. Maybe even scattered some above the ceiling. She took a deep breath.
a huge part of the tension in her chest abruptly easing. Of course there were Islamari in the ceiling. That was how and why her link to Luke had been so abruptly cut off, which meant he was still alive. She took another breath, suddenly aware that Park and Fel were both staring at her.
"Such a gracious invitation," she said,
trying to pick up on the threads of conversation before her silence became too blatant.
"Sorry to disappoint you, but I already have a job."
But too late.
"I see she's figured it out," Fel said conversationally.
"Yes,"
Park said.
"I'm rather surprised it took her this long, actually. Particularly since she noticed the Islamari effect as soon as she came within the effect of their shroud. I could see the break in her step."
"At least it proves she has Jedi abilities," Fel said. "Just as well we were prepared."
"I congratulate you all on your cleverness,"
Mara said, putting some scorn into her voice.
"You are indeed the true heirs to Thrawn's genius and military might. Let's stop dancing around, shall we? What exactly do you want from me?"
"As General Fel has already said,"
Park said,
"we want you to join us."
Mara felt her eyes narrow.
"You are joking."
"Not at all,"
Park said.
"In fact..."
"Admiral,"
Stent interrupted, his head tilted slightly to one side, as if listening to something.
"Someone's just tried to access the upper command room computer."
"Skywalker,"
Fel said with a nod.
"Nice of him to save us the trouble of tracking him down. Have the Phalanx bring him here, Stent. Remind them that only those carrying Islamari are to approach him."
"Yes, sir."
Stent stepped past Fel and headed along the wall at a fast walk, speaking rapidly in his own language as he headed for the door. As he passed Mara, she caught a glimpse of a small device in his ear. The Chiss version of a comlink, no doubt.
"He'll be joining us in a few minutes,"
Fel said, looking back at Mara.
"You must rank very highly indeed in Coruscant's eyes for them to send Luke Skywalker himself to rescue you. I hope he won't resist to the point of the Chiss having to hurt him."
"I hope for the Chiss's sake they haven't bitten off more than they can swallow,"
Mara countered, trying to sound more confident than she felt. Luke had had to function under the handicap of Islamari before, but that had been a long time ago.
"Speaking of getting hurt, General, what happened to your face? Or is that patch just something you wear to impress the natives?"
"I lost my eye in our final battle against one of the many would-be warlords out here,"
Fel said, his voice calm but with an edge to it.
"Our medical replacement facilities are limited, and I opted to forego a new eye in favor of others of my pilots who might need the operation."
He smiled tightly, a glimpse of the younger, brasher Fel showing through the age and maturity.
"Besides, even with one eye, I'm still the best pilot around."
"I'm sure,"
Mara agreed.
"But imagine what you'd be like with two of them again. And the way the war with the New Republic has dwindled down to basically nothing, I imagine the Empire's got a pretty good surplus of spare prosthetics. All it would take is you showing up and asking for one."
She looked back at Park.
"But of course, that would mean letting Bastion in on the big secret, which is apparently something you don't want to do. Why not?"
Park sighed.
"Because everything we've done here, everything we have here, really belongs to Thrawn. And at this point, we frankly don't know which side of your conflict he's going to come down on."
Mara blinked.
"Excuse me? An Imperial Grand Admiral, and you don't know which side he's going to take?"
"The Empire's been whittled down to 8 sectors,"
Fel reminded her.
"Militarily, they're no longer a power even worth considering."
"And as you've already pointed out, they still have a lingering problem with anti-alien biases,"
Park added.
On the other hand, Coruscant has serious problems of its own. Most notably, its inability to keep its members from fighting with each other.
Which is where you come in, Fel said. As the Emperor's hand, you knew a great deal about the Empire and those in power there. On the other hand, as a friend of Skywalker and his associates, you're also well acquainted with the New Republic regime on Coruscant.
He smiled tightly.
And, of course, as Talon Card's second-in-command, you know a great deal about everything else. You'd be invaluable in helping us end the conflict, unify this region, and begin preparations for the challenges ahead.
Your expertise and knowledge are very important to us,
Park said.
Our attention has been necessarily turned outward, with the result that we're somewhat out of touch with matters of this part of space. We need someone who can fill that gap.
And so naturally you thought of me, Mara said sardonically.
Don't be so flippant,
Fel admonished.
I'm not being flippant, I'm being disbelieving, she countered. I hardly think Thrawn would have approved of you hiring me as your local affairs advisor.
On the contrary,
Park said.
Thrawn regarded you quite highly. I know for a fact that he intended to offer you a position with us once the Empire had regained its territory.
One of the Chiss beside Park stirred, tilting his head as Stent had done earlier. Admiral, he said softly, squatting down beside the chair and whispering something into Park's ear. Park replied, and for a minute they held an inaudible conversation. Mara ran her eye over Fel and the five Chiss, mentally mapping out how she might be able to take them down if it came to a fight. But the attempt was little more than a mental exercise, and she knew it. With their eyes steady on her, and their hands resting on their holstered weapons, there was no chance she could take out all of them before they got her. Not without the Force. The conversation ended, and the Chiss stood back up and strode rapidly away along the wall.
Please excuse the interruption,
Park apologized as the alien left the room.
No problem, Mara said.
Down to four Chiss now, plus Felon Park.
Still rotten odds.
Having trouble pinning Skywalker down?
Not really,
Park assured her.
Glad to hear it, Mara said,
wishing more than ever that she could pick up something of his thoughts. That exit hadn't looked like the departure of someone who wasn't really having trouble.
If she only had some idea what Luke was up to. So Thrawn intended to offer me a commission, did he?
He did indeed,
Park said.
He knew who all the best people were, both in overall skills and the kind of mental toughness he needed.
He gestured toward Fel.
General Fel is a good example. His rebellion against Izzard was of no consequence to Thrawn. What mattered was his feelings for the people and worlds of this region. So after Thrawn had Izzard capture him...
Wait a minute, Mara interrupted. Thrawn was involved with that?
It was entirely his plan,
Fel said.
You don't think Izzard could have come up with anything that clever, do you?
His mouth tightened, his remaining eye gazing away thoughtfully into the distance.
He brought me out here,
he said quietly.
Showed me what it was we faced, and what we'd have to do to stop it. Showed me that with even all the resources of the Empire and the Republic combined, and with himself at the head, there were no guarantees of victory.